This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Allahu Akbar. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. أشهد أن محمد رسول الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله حي على الصلاة حي على الصلاة حي على الفلاح حي على الفلاح الله أكبر الله أكبر لا إله إلا الله
الحمد لله ثم الحمد لله الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستهديه ونستغفره ونستنصره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهدي الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلن تجد له وليا مرشدا وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له إلها واحدا أحدا صمدا لم يتخذ صاحبة ولا ولدا ولم يكن له كفوا أحد وأشهد أن نبينا وعظيمنا محمدا عبد الله ورسوله وصفيه من خلقه وحبيبه اللهم صل وسلم وبارك على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين وبعد يقول جل جلاله في محكم التنزيل الرجال قوامون على النساء بما فضل الله بعضهم على بعض وبما أنفقوا من أموالهم. He says, subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah An-Nisa, indeed, men are caregivers or caretakers for their women within their lives. And this is based on the advantages that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has granted each of them and the wealth that they have spent. This is the second khutbah within the series. Within the contemporary issue series, I talked about two topics, and the third topic was marriage, and this is the second khutbah within that topic. And there's a third one next week as well. I thought I was going to give this whole topic within one khutbah, but that was very far-fetched, obviously. And what I talked about last week, I shared with you 4 points, and I used a thought process continuum in terms of the steps that are needed to be taken or the mistakes and some pieces of advice to actually achieve marriage. And today I'm going to move on from where I left off last week. And the first point that I'm going to share with you is regarding finding a spouse. Finding a spouse has always been, historically, has always been through your social network. It's always been through your social network. It's never been any other way. You can't be expected to just walk into the world and there's 8 billion people in the world and you somehow you're going to find that one person. Of course, the idea of the one is another musiba that I'm not going to talk about today because that on its own is a delusion that I don't think it needs to be talked about. But the whole concept of you just walking out and finding someone is extremely, it's ludicrous. It's not realistic. The way people have found spouses all throughout history is through their social networks. It's through utilizing your parents, your siblings, people who are related to your friends. That's how you find a spouse. If your parents are looking for you and with the options that they are showing you, you don't like, well, look around. You have friends. Are they not married? Did you not find one of their wives to be a reasonable human being, decent, has good ethics? Ask for a family member there. That's how you do this. You look for spouses through your social network. These apps that have come out and these other, I don't know. I don't know what to say about them. I don't know if this is, I haven't seen a good example from this yet. Like, I really haven't seen this work out well. You need to utilize your social network. People who are against their parents being involved in their marriage, there's no wisdom in that. You need your parents involved. That doesn't mean they choose your spouse for you. That's not what I'm saying. Choosing your spouse is your obligation, it's your responsibility, and it's your right. Involve the people who love you the most and know you the most, who knows you more than your own parents, your siblings, the people who are close to you. Involve them. Let them be of aid to you as you go through this process of choosing a spouse. That's all I have to say on this topic, because this has always been the case for people getting married. Only recently have I seen parents remove themselves from this obligation. It's only recently that I've seen arham, relatives, remove themselves from this realm and let people kind of on their own go ahead and try and figure it out by themselves. And I just don't think it's a very smart or wise move to do, because you require the input of people around you who know you well. You require it. You need them to weigh in and say whether this is going to work for you or not. Marriage is not, it's not time limited. As much as some people, you go for a decade and a half and then you're done. It's there. This is your life. You want to make sure that the person is as compatible as possible. And how do you do that? You make sure you involve the people who know you the most, love you the most, and care for your well-being the most. So make sure you utilize your social network if you want to find a spouse. And that goes for men, and it goes for women as well. Second point. He says, subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Al-Baqarah, وَلَا جُنَاحَ عَلَيْكُمْ Surah Al-Nisa, وَلَا جُنَاحَ عَلَيْكُمْ فِيمَا تَرَضَيْتُمْ بِهِ مِنْ بَعْدِ الْفَرِيضَةِ This is an extremely beautiful and important verse regarding marriage. What he's saying is, لَا جُنَاحَ, you are not to be blamed for anything that you agree upon with your spouse outside of the faridah. What's the faridah? The faridah is making sure that there's a wali, that there are witnesses, that there's a dowry, and there's an acceptance from both, and you do the katib kitab, the aqd qiran, meaning everything is following the pillars of nikah. Outside of that, whatever you agree to with your spouse is fine. Whatever it may be. The problem I find is that people spend the critical time where they should be discussing these issues, roles and expectations. They spend that time discussing issues that aren't that important, that you can afford to talk about later. All the lovey-dovey stuff. You can leave that. Can be done. You have time for that. Don't worry. You have a lifetime to do that. Right now, you need to make sure you're talking about the issues that will affect your well-being and the other person's well-being. If you enter into a relationship and your expectations are very different from the other person's expectations, and your understanding of your role and their role is very different from their understanding, you are driving a car at 200 kilometers right into a brick wall. The amount of agony and suffering that this causes for both parties is immeasurable. Because you're walking into a partnership and you don't know who's doing what. Because people tend to follow the norm of whatever their parents are doing. This used to be fine back in the day when people were very similar, when you were living in similar spots and people all had the basic same upbringing and behaved the same with it. I know for a fact that my grandfather did not have to have this conversation at any point. There's no need for it. Everyone knew exactly what they were doing. But now, within this mixing pot that we are a part of, this ummah, people are very different. You need to have these conversations. When I got married, it was very simple. I work in the morning, I'm in the hospital, in the evening, in the masjid. I need a housewife. I need someone who's willing to take care of the house and the children. Now, if she had said no, that would be fine. It's not evil. There's no right and wrong here. There's no right and wrong when it comes to agreement. There's no good and bad. There is what suits you, what works for you, what your life experiences about, what your life skills are, how you're going to live your life. If she said no, khalas, no problem. It doesn't mean that she's wrong. She should have said yes. No. If she's a neurosurgeon, it makes no sense. It makes no sense for me to come to a neurosurgeon, 7 years of residency, 15 years of medicine, and tell them, okay, stay home and take care of the kids. There's no sense in that. Obviously, there has to be an arrangement that works for both parties, but that's the arrangement that works for me.
That's my lifestyle. That's the arrangement I need. It doesn't make me evil either. It doesn't, no one's wrong or right here. It's just, did you talk about these things up front? Did you sit together and say, here's what I'm looking for. What are you looking for? And then she will say what she's looking, and you figure out what works based on what your lives are like. And whatever system you come up with your spouse, it's fine. There are many different ways to run a household. I'm going to share with you a story. It's in the collection of Imam Ahmad. And it's an authentic hadith. It's a long hadith. I'm going to just take the piece that it matters. And the hadith is Ibn Abbas is telling us that he was with Sayyidina Umar ibn al-Khattab on a journey. There's a lot of people. And Umar al-Khattab took a left. He kind of deviated a little bit from the group because he wanted to do his business. He needed to do something. So Ibn Abbas took this as an opportunity to take his wudu for him. Like, I'll go with you. Before, back then, you have to find a spot. You have to dig a hole. You have to do things. Then you want to come out. You need someone to help you with wudu. There were no taps or running water. So Ibn Abbas took his wudu to offer it to Sayyidina Umar al-Khattab and take the opportunity to ask him a question. So he asked him, as he was making wudu, radiallahu anhu, he said, who are the two ladies in the ayat of Surah Al-Tahrim? With أسر النبي إلى بعض أزواجه حديثا فلما نبأت به وأظهره الله عليه عرف بعضه وأعرض عن بعض فلما نبأها به قالت من أنبأك هذا قال نبأني العليم الخبير إن تتوبا إلى الله. The first half of Surah Al-Tahrim, the first half page. He didn't like the question, Sayyidina Umar. For a good reason, because the lady involved was his own daughter, Hafsa, who was married to the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. So he didn't like the question. He told him, why are you asking this? But I'll answer you. It was Aisha and Hafsa. And then he told him a story. And I'm going to quote for you, word for word, what he said in the story. So understand that the topic that I'm talking about is not new. Has existed amongst cultures and within marriages, at least as far as I can tell, 1400 years ago at least. It probably goes back to the time Adam and Eve met. But I'm saying it goes back at least that far. And this is what he said. Listen to what he said. قَلْ كُنَّ مَعْشَرَ قُرَيْشِ قَوْمًا نَغْلِبُ النِّسَاءِ فَقَدِمْنَا عَلَى قَوْمٍ يَغْلِبُهُمْ نِسَاؤُهُمْ فَطَفِقَ نِسَاؤُنَا يَتَعَلَّمْنَا مِنْهُمْ. So we used to be people in Mecca where we had full authority over our wives. And then we came to Medina where the men did not have authority over their wives and our women started to learn from their women. This is what Umar al-Khattab is saying. 1400 years ago. Aside from the fact that Islam would only flourish in a place where the arrangement of marriage was much more equal and much more fair, that's a whole different story. That's a whole another aspect of the beauty of our deen. But this was a struggle that Umar ibn al-Khattab found. And he tells Ibn Abbas, he goes on, فَرَاجَعَتْنِي زَوْجَتِي فَقُلْتُ أَتُرَاجِعِينَنِي. And my wife said no and argued with me and told me to. And I said, what are you doing? When did this start? When are you? فَقَالَتْ وَمَا لِي لَا أُرَاجِعُكَ. He told me, what's wrong with me arguing with you? وَنِسَاءُ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ يُرَاجِعْنَهُ وَتَهْجُرُهُ إِحْدَاهُنَّ الْيَوْمَ إِلَى اللَّيْلِ. Why wouldn't I argue with you? When the Prophet ﷺ's wives argue with him and they get upset with him and they don't speak to him for a day. Sayyidina al-Khattab almost had a stroke. And not because of the fact that it's happening. It's because he's like, so you're telling me the Prophet's wives are arguing with him. So he walked, they said he went towards the house of his daughter. He couldn't see with his eyes. Like he couldn't see. People gave him salam, nothing. Salam alaikum ya Umar. He doesn't even see it. He's going to he knocks on the door of his daughter and he asks her, is it true? Are they arguing? Are the wives of the Prophet arguing with him and not speaking to him? فَقَالَتْ نَعَمْ. And then he said something I can't say on a minbar to his daughter. And he said, what about you? أَتُرَاجِعِينَ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ. And you argue with him? So she could see that her father has. So she didn't say anything. فَقَالَ لَا يَغُرَّنَّكِ جَارَتُكِ وَهِيَ أَوْسَمُ مِنْكِ وَأَحَبُّ إِلَى رَسُولِ اللَّهِ مِنْكِ وَأَبُوهَا أَحَبُّ إِلَى أَبِيهَا مِنْكِ أَن تَفْعَلِي مِثْلَ فِعْلِهَا. Don't let your neighbor, who's prettier than you, who's more beloved to the Prophet than you, and her father is more beloved than the Prophet than your father, make you think that it's okay for you to do this. صلى الله عليه وسلم رضي الله عن عمر. He's talking to his daughter. Don't think that if Aisha does it, it's okay for you. And she did it anyways. And Hafsa did it anyways. And she's the one in the verse. And the Quran didn't come and tell them that we can't do that anymore. And the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, there was no judgment. It was the norm. The people of Mecca weren't used to it. Umar wasn't used to it. But it didn't matter. Because there's more than one way to run a family. There's more than one way to run things. Islam is not saying that there's a right and a wrong. I'll talk about a default in a moment. But you have to make sure that there's an agreement. You have to talk about the stuff that matters. so that when you enter marriage, you know what your role is, what the expectations are. So you don't end up disagreeing in the middle of it on something that is fundamentally important and there are children involved. And at that point, there's no way to fix it. And then you go and there's no way to fix it because you didn't talk, you didn't ask the right questions up front. You weren't clear. I have a lot of young men come and say, I don't know what I want. They don't know. And I can understand that. You don't. You have no idea. You don't know what to expect. Ask your dad. Ask your dad what he wanted. And he'll tell you what to look for. Because after 15 years of marriage, you look for something that is peaceful. You want to recline. You want to be in a situation where you feel comfortable. That's what you want. No one wants to continue to do things that they never wanted to do in the first place. No one wants to be asked to do stuff that they didn't want to do from the beginning. But if you don't have that conversation, you have no right. You can't change it. That was your fault. You didn't talk about this up front. Now you're stuck with what you're stuck with. So you have to have these conversations up front. It's very important. It's central within this story that you take time and you talk beforehand. You can talk about the other stuff later. You can enjoy the romantic piece of marriage. You have time, believe me. Talk about the stuff that matter. What your roles are, what your expectations are. إخواني وأخواتي سأختصر لكم وأعتذر الخطبة الأسبوع الماضي لم أستطع ولم يتسنى لي أن ألخص معنى الخطبة لكن هذا الأسبوع إن شاء الله تعالى ألخص لكم المعنى إخواني وأخواتي في الزواج يجب في بحثك عن الزوج وفي بحثك عن الزوج وبحثك عن الزوجة أن تستخدم الشبكة الاجتماعية التي تحيط بك أن تستخدم أباك وأمك أن تستخدم إخوتك وأقاربك وأرحامك وأصدقائك لا يمكن للإنسان أن يتعرف على الناس هكذا دون أن يكون هناك صلة بين الأول والثاني يجب أن يكون هناك تواصل الإنسان لا يستطيع وحده أن يعرف خفايا الذي أمامه وإذا حاول فعل ذلك وحده أخطأ وقع فيما لا يحمد عقباه لكن استخدم الذين هم حولك لا يعني هذا الكلام أن أباك أو أمك أو غيرهم من الأرحام هم الذين يختارون زوجتك أو يختارون لك زوجك ولكن على الأقل استفيدي واستفد من خبرتهم فليعرضوا عليك الأسماء وليروك العائلات الذين هم أكفاء والذين تستطيع أن تتفق معهم هذا هو الأصل الزواج لا يحصل إلا هكذا لا أدري متى ظننا أن الفرد أن الشاب أو الشابة بإمكانهم أن يذهبوا ويبحثوا عن أزواجهم وحدهم لا أدري متى بدأ هذا الأمر الزواج دائما يحصل من خلال المعارف من خلال الشبكات الاجتماعية يا فلان صديقك متزوج من امرأة هي صالحة انظر في أقاربها هكذا الأمر الإنسان عادة يتبع سنة أهله قليل جدا أن يخالف الإنسان سنة أهله إذا كان الأهل خير إذا كان الأهل جماعة طيبين فيكون الأولاد كذلك هذه المسألة مسألة يعني تقريبا عندي محسومة والمفروض أن يستخدم الإنسان معارفه وأن يفعلهم في البحث عن الأزواج والزوجات النقطة الثانية يا أخواني التراضي قبل الزواج يجب أن يكون هناك يعني محادثات واضحة وجلية في قضايا ما يتوقع من الإنسان في زواجه في دوره في حقوقه في واجباته يجب أن يتم الاتفاق على هذه المسائل يا أخواني ما تضيعوا لا تضيعوا بالذات يا الشباب لا تضيعوا وقت الخطبة وقت في الحديث عن يعني أنت ليلى وأنا مجنون ليلى تحدثوا عن المفيد وإلا تصبح مجنونا فعلا فيما بعد لكن هي ليست ليلى إذا لم تتحدث عن المفيد فعلا تجن في آخر العمر الإنسان إذا أهمل الحديث عن القضايا المهمة التي من خلالها يجد سعادته ويجد فرحته ويجد راحة باله هو قال سبحانه وتعالى وجعل بينكم مودة ورحمة هذه المودة والرحمة لا تأتي من فراغ تأتي من وضوح من وضوح الأدوار من وضوح الحقوق من وضوح الواجبات هناك أشكال كثيرة للعائلة ليست كل العائلات مثل بعضها لا يعيب الإنسان على آخر ويقول هذا الإنسان والله زوجته تعمل وإيش المشكلة تعمل أين المشكلة أن تعمل والله هذا الإنسان والله يبقى مع أطفاله وتعمل أين المشكلة في ذلك إذا كان هو متفقا مع زوجته لا علاقة لك لا تأتي بما تعودت عليه وتفرضه على الناس اترك الناس إذا كان ابن الخطاب رضي الله عنه أمير المؤمنين لم يتفق أو بادي الأمر مع أهل المدينة مع الأنصار فما بالك بمن هم دونهم أقول قولي هذا وأستغفر الله لي ولكم فاستغفروه يغفر لكم يا فوز المستغفرين استغفر الله الحمد لله وحده وصلى الله وسلم وبارك على من لا نبي بعده وعلى آله وصحبه ومن اتبع نهجه ووفى عهده. The third point. This is important. There's always a default within the Islamic family that both parties can go back to at any time. There's always a default within the Islamic family that both parties, or either party, at any time within their marriage, they can go back to at any time. The default is the man is the breadwinner. He is the provider. And the woman is responsible for the well-being. She's the caregiver of the children and the integrity of the house, or the household. He is responsible for the financial well-being of his wife, his children, and the house. And she's responsible for being the physical caregiver or making sure that physical caregiving is occurring to the children and the home. That is the default. At any point, they can go back to that. I'm going to give you examples to understand what I'm saying, understand why having these conversations is important. So if a lady who is working at one point in her life, at some point says, you know what? I don't want to be responsible for this household financially anymore. I don't want to be taking care of this house financially. I want you to go out and be the breadwinner, take care of this house, and I'll take care of the children. He has to go and do that. He can't say, well, we agreed. No. Doesn't matter what you agreed to. This default always applies. She can always ask for him to be the breadwinner and for herself to take care of the children. He can do the same. He can at any point in the marriage say, I want you to take care of the children. That doesn't mean she can't work. Listen to this very carefully. It doesn't mean that she can't work. It just means that now she's responsible for the physical caregiving. Whether she hires someone from her own wealth, whatever she wants to do. She can do whatever she wants. She's responsible for the integrity of the home and the caregiving of the children. And he can say, I'm going to be the breadwinner. And at that point, her wealth is her wealth. She doesn't have to spend any of her money on the household anymore once that's the case. He has to spend his wealth on the house. Whatever she makes is hers. But she's responsible for the caregiving of the children. So if she's not going to do it physically herself, she has to hire someone to do it. Now, you may say, well, I don't want a third party taking care of my children. Great. I agree with you. Did you have that conversation up front? Did you? You didn't. You can't force her to leave her work. I'm sorry. This is the reality of the matter. Did you have that conversation up front? I did. Like, I'm not okay with not eating with my own parents. Taking care of my children. It has to be either me or you. Okay? Yes, okay. Good. And one of us is going to do this. But if you didn't have that conversation, and it's not wrong, if they decide to have a caregiver, a third caregiver, is that wrong? Is that haram? No, it isn't. Can you shame someone for deciding that they want to do that? If you have two physicians or two lawyers, they're married, of course they're going to need a third person to help. Of course, it's impossible. They're going to need that third person. But the it has to be agreed on how that financial situation is going to be monitored or managed with amongst themselves. Whatever you agree upon beforehand will take precedence. But the default is always there. You can always go back to the default. The lady can always say, I want to stay home. I don't want to be responsible financially. I want to take care of the kids. You have to go be the breadwinner. You can always say, I don't want you taking care of us financially. I'll do that. You're responsible for the children. And then she has to figure out how she's going to do that. It's best for this all to be agreed upon. It's best if it's all a discussion and it's some degree of compromise from both parties to make sure the family works. But that default in Islam is very important. Second point, with responsibility comes leadership. And with leadership, there's responsibility. The man is responsible. In front of God, he is the qawwam. He's the caregiver. He's responsible. If you're a man, you're responsible for the well-being of your family. It doesn't mean you're a dictator. It doesn't mean that you have to make the decisions. No, it just means that you're responsible. You could easily say, go ahead, take care, take all the decisions regarding this issue. I trust you, but you're still responsible. You are the protector. That never changes. The man is the protector of his family. There is no agreement that will take that away. You can't sit before Zawaj and say, no, you're not my protector. No, the man is the protector. That's how it is. When the Titanic goes down, the lady and the children get on the boat and you will play the cello as you sink. And that's okay with you because your life as a man is less valuable than your wife and children. And if you're not okay with that, then you're not okay with masculinity. That's what it means to be a man, that you are the protector of these people. You'll chop your arm off at any moment to protect your wife and protect your children. Done deal. That's as clear as it can be. With that responsibility comes leadership. You have to be the leader. You have to be the pilot. It doesn't mean that there's not a co-pilot. It doesn't mean that you make decisions on your own. That's not what this means. That's never meant that. But you're responsible. You can't have two people driving the car at the same time unless one of the steering wheels doesn't really work. It's like giving a child a control that doesn't have a battery. One of them has to be holding on to the steering wheel. It can be the wife, it's no problem. But the man is still responsible for the outcome. you're still responsible. You are the protector, period. You need to remember that. I am watching young men go through this. And they just, it's unclear. It's unclear. They don't feel that. They don't feel that. That concept of your, this is your family. You're the protector of this family. You need to make sure they are well, that they are safe. And that's where, when you read in Islam, ta'a, when you hear the word obedience to the husband, you hear that in Islam, it comes regarding, it's within the realm of protection. It's when the man is actually trying to protect his family, he should be listened to. When he's watching out for their well-being, for their safety, he should be listened to, because that's his job. His job is to make sure they're safe. This is the relationship that exists within marriage. And this is what we have to make sure we understand. For the sisters, here's just a little piece. It's not in your best interest to have a man who doesn't understand this. It's not in your best interest to have a man who does not feel like he's the leader of his family and that he is not the protector of his family. That's not a man that you want in your life. Trust me, you don't want that person fathering your children. You want the masculinity of men and the femininity of women are the two most beautiful things that we have. There are more similarities between men and women than there are differences by far. But the femininity and the masculinity of men and women has to be taken care of. We can't dull it out. It's what makes us unique. It's what allows families to work. You want him to be as masculine as possible. You want him to be strong and brave and courageous and confident so he can lead your family, so you have someone to be proud of, so your kids have someone to look up to, so they have social status. Without that, nothing. And you need your wife to have that feminine piece. You have to make sure she's taken care of. You have to make sure that she's not overburdened with that which she cannot carry in her life. We are messing up this very delicate thing. Forgive me. We are messing up something extremely delicate that is not, there's no room for experimental aspects to this. We can't experiment with this. Right? Don't experiment. This is how this worked for a long time. When you go against nature, I'm not going to even talk about, I'm on a minbar of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. I'm going to talk outside of religion for a second. When you go against nature, things don't work very well. When you decide that the traits of men and women, the masculine side and the feminine side, are no longer of any value, they don't dictate anything, there's nothing that needs to come with that, then you're basically going against what is natural. And things rarely work when you go against what is natural. That's what I wanted to share with you today regarding this. I know not everyone will fully agree with what I have to say. That's fine. This is advice that I'm offering you. Nowhere in this khutbah am I saying that there's only one way to run a family. No, I'm saying you need to agree beforehand. I am reminding you that there's an Islamic default that both parties can always go back to. And I'm reminding you that with responsibility, there is leadership. And with leadership, there is responsibility. And I'll talk about the abuse of these things, inshallah, next week. I hope that was a benefit to you. أختصر لكم بسرعة باللغة العربية هناك قضيتان ولن أطيل فيهما الأولى يا أخواني هناك دائما أصل في الشرع يعود إليه الزوجان بلا إشكال الرجل مسؤول عن النفقة عن نفقة الزوجة ونفقة أولاده ونفقة البيت والمرأة مسؤولة عن رعاية أولادها وبيتها هذا الأصل بإمكان الزوجين في أي لحظة أن يعودا إليه إلى هذا الأصل وأن يطالبا بالعودة إلى الأصل هذا باتفاق أهل العلم هذا ما في خلاف فيها فإذا المرأة قالت لا أريد أن أصرف من مالي على البيت وأريد أن أرعى الأولاد أصرف أنت وجب عليه أن يصرف لكن وجب عليها أن تعتني بالأولاد سواء بوقتها أو بمالها ووجب عليه النفقة والعكس بالعكس إذا الرجل قال أنا أريدك أن ترعي الأولاد وأنا أخرج العمل فوجب عليها أن تقوم برعاية الأولاد ولو كان ذلك من مالها لا يحق للرجل أن يمنع المرأة زوجته عن العمل إلا لدواع أمنية إلا بسبب الخوف على مصلحتها والخوف على أمنها لأنك أنت النقطة الثانية الرجل مسؤول عن الحماية القوام ما القوام؟ القوام القائم على حماية وحفظ الآخرين أنت مسؤول عن حفظ زوجتك أنت مسؤول عن حماية أسرتك يأتي مع هذه المسؤولية قيادة أنت مسؤول أن تقود هذا لا يعني أنك تستأثر بجميع القرارات هذا لا يعني أنك تتصرف وكأنك تعيش مع أشخاص لا قيمة لهم لا أبدا هي شريكتك في الحياة والعمل لكنك في الآخر يوم القيامة أمام الله أنت مسؤول مسؤول عن كلكم راع لما أعطى النبي عليه الصلاة والسلام المثال في الحديث ماذا قال الرجل راع في أهله وقال المرأة راعية في بيت زوجها هكذا قال عليه الصلاة والسلام هذا الحديث العام خصصه بمثال الزوجية أنت مسؤول فما دمت مسؤولا وجب عليك أن تتصرف وفق تلك المسؤولية. واعلموا أن الله أمرنا بأمر عظيم فقال: إن الله وملائكته يصلون على النبي، يا أيها الذين آمنوا صلوا عليه وسلموا تسليما. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما صليت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم، وبارك على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما باركت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم في العالمين، إنك حميد مجيد. وارض اللهم عن الأربعة الخلفاء السادة الحنفاء أبي بكر وعمر وعثمان وعلي، وارض اللهم عن أزواجه أمهات المؤمنين، وعن آله الطيبين الطاهرين، وعن صحابته الغر الميامين، وعن التابعين ومن تبعهم بإحسان إلى يوم الدين، وعنا معهم برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين. اللهم اغفر للمسلمين والمسلمات والمؤمنين والمؤمنات الأحياء منهم والأموات. اللهم فرج هموم المهمومين، ونفس كروب المكروبين، وارفع الغم عن المغمومين، وارفع الظلم عن المظلومين، واحقن دماءنا ودماء المسلمين. اللهم انصر إخواننا المرابطين في المسجد الأقصى، ورده إلينا في العاجل القريب يا رب العالمين، وردنا أجمعين إليك وإلى دينك ردا جميلا، وتب علينا من جميع ذنوبنا توبة نصوحة طهرنا بها قلبا وجسدا وروحا، وما ذلك عليك اللهم بعزيز. ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. عباد الله، إن الله يأمر بالعدل والإحسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم لعلكم تذكرون. Before Iqama, I remind you, August is the month of outreach for us here in the center. We are encouraging everyone to come to the masjid, to bring people to with you who don't come to masajid, where you bring them to Jumu'ah or a random prayer during the night or day. We have people here who would like to get to know people, others, and offer them services and involve them in our community. So please participate with us every Saturday night. After Maghrib, there is a social event that is geared towards outreach. If you have friends that aren't comfortable coming to masajid, bring them. They can sit outside, they can eat, they can think, they have good.